Chapter 8. The Scorpion's Sting. Said the scorpion to the frog, "Give me a ride across the Nile. It's wide and swift." Frog, "No, you will sting and kill me." Scorpion, "If I did, I'd also drown. I can't swim." Frog, "Very well, hop onto my back." Halfway across the Nile, the scorpion stung him. Paralyzed, the frog began to sink. Frog, "Why?" Scorpion, "I can't help myself. It is in my nature." Egyptian adaptation of Aesop's fable. Named after the red Persian pomegranate flower, Gulnar was born in November 1941 under the astrological sign of Scorpio. She was exotically attractive, with smoky eyes, jet black hair, and a dark complexion, favouring Baba's genes rather than her mother's fairer Nordic ones. Like the scorpion, she was unpredictable. She was Baba's special little girl. When she was little and no brother existed, he'd improvise songs for her, songs of praise of her beauty and wondrousness. Mama would arrange Gulnar's braids into a crowning wreath or hanging down with red ribbons while telling her how beautiful she was. For 3 years, she was the princess, the beauty, the sweetest infant girl in the family, the centre of attention, garnering all the praise and compliments from Baba, grandparents, aunts and uncles. She had no rivals. Mama described her development from a baby into a young girl in almost every letter sent to her parents, throughout the war and into the post-war years, until Gulnar and her German grandparents finally met. I don't know if my parents had prepared her for my arrival. Either way, the tectonic shift of attention from Gulnar to the highly prized male was hard for her. In an instant not of her making, she was suddenly displaced by a baby, a cute boy who, as my parents casually confessed, overshadowed her in value and primacy. She watched as parents, aunts, and uncles expressed appreciation, joy, praise, or gratitude for Abdel Aziz's son. But he was the intruder into her world. As the phrase, Alhamdulillah, a son, profound in Egyptian society, began to sink in, she understood that she, a female, and subsequently a woman, was considered less valuable. Furthermore, this son held the potential of power over her destiny. Her aunts encouraged her to foster a big sister attitude of caring, deference, and unending praise for the boy. Instead, she developed a brother complex, extreme envy and jealousy, which grew to hatred with the sting of a scorpion. Gulnar must have found herself in a sudden state of disequilibrium as Baba raised her brother above her. Her Baba had betrayed her. She probably felt forsaken, deceived by her first love, the one she had called Dada Dada. He had held her hand as his precious princess until suddenly and without warning his demeanour changed to benign neglect. Baba had sung to her, called her my special girl, held her, made a fuss over her, spoiled her, all in contrast to her impatient, irritable, compulsive mother who pushed to potty train her and who regimented her days. Early photographs of her taken in the absence of a sibling portrayed a happy and radiant girl. Subsequent photos in which her little nemesis was present clearly showed her unhappy demeanour, as captured by the family Leica. The smile, the laughter she had shown the world became the sober glare of one who connives. Any joviality she may have displayed toward me was a facade for what became a very secretive personality, the scheming Gulnar I have known all my life. Then, as now, I felt uneasy when her eyes fixed on me, for I was unable to guess what she was thinking. I became the vulnerable object of her devious gaze and developed a big sister apprehension. To this day I carry the scars of revenge so deeply that I live with its heightened awareness and sensitivity. Mama told me that due to the war, the cholera endemic, and the lack of pasteurized milk, she breastfed me. I would like to think now that, enveloped in her arms, I experienced her warmth, her comfort, her lingering scent, the moistness of her nipple. Mama told me repeatedly that during such special interludes, the scorpion would stealthily creep up from behind like a cat on its prey. She would look up to see Gulnar cautiously approaching with a deceptively benign smile. Before Mama could gently sweep her aside, Gulnar would swiftly pinch me on my arms or on my bare thighs, making me cry out. The scorpion had successfully struck. Gulnar would skip away as if nothing had happened. Though each repetitive intrusion unfolded in a similar way, Mama did little to anticipate or prevent these attacks. My apprehension progressively grew on seeing Gulnar's approach. I would struggle and cry to forewarn Mama of my impending pain. She merely fussed with her breast, leaving me with a feeling of being let down by her. Gulnar's resentment of me developed into a physical illness. Her unresolved anguish manifested itself psychosomatically in chronic urticaria, an allergic trigger of distressing skin rashes over her entire body. She had red, raised, itchy welts which she scratched incessantly until they bled, preventing her from sleeping, but bringing Mama's attention. The outbreak lasted more than 6 weeks until finally Baba took her shortly before my second birthday to the seaside in Alexandria. They returned a month later, her urticaria cured, her love for her father restored. Yet I was still there. During her absence, Mama sat me on a white enamel pot, leaving me alone in the tiled entrance hall to potty train, periodically checking to see if there was a result. She said I mimed the nursery rhymes, not understanding their words, my legs propelling me forward about the foyer. The pot scooted with ease over the smooth floor from one end of the room to the other. How long this went on is, of course, my conjecture. It ended when I wore a hole through the pot's enamel base, coinciding with my use of the toilet and my sister's return. Gulnar's assaults on me resumed with greater malice. This was not ordinary sibling rivalry, it was sibling annihilation. My next recollection is of sitting in a high chair, trapped in place by a tray in front of me. I was a sitting duck. Mama was on the other side of the swinging kitchen door, preparing my usual lunch, beans in tomato sauce, rice, and a little minced lamb. Gulnar approached me, wielding a broom handle, held at shoulder level like a bat, ready to swing it full force into my face. I squirmed in my seat, yelling, "Mama! Mama! Mama!" I threw my spoon with a primal shriek of distress. Gulnar ducked, and the spoon missed. In the off-balance instant, Mama swung through the door and disarmed her. Occasionally, we agreed to play together. When Sister Edith Roske returned to Germany after the war, she sent us two sheets of paper dolls, a boy and a girl with separately printed clothing. Mama glued them on thin cardboard after cutting them out. Gulnar and I played Mommy and Daddy. It was fun to dress and undress Hansi and Ursula and see their different body outlines. I always wanted the doll Gulnar had, and she would not let me have my way. Gulnar said that the daddy went to work to earn money. I would ride off around the flat on my scooter with Hansi, making engine noises and bargaining with pretend friends to bring money back to Gulnar. In the meantime, Gulnar and Ursula played with the children at our imaginary house. This worked quite well for a couple of days, until I protested. I wanted to be the mommy, to change Hansi and Ursula's clothes. Gulnar could be the daddy.
"You can't be," Gulnar would say. "You're a boy."
Not getting my way, I would furiously stomp my foot, forcefully pushing and shoving her to get what I wanted. I was the privileged son. The argument went back and forth until my parents intervened. Mama was impatient with me, siding with Gulnar and telling her under her voice to divert my attention. Baba, my best friend, was always there for me. He would solve our arguments patiently, impartially, until the play resumed. When our maid came of a marriageable age, she returned to Beni Harim, and the Omda promptly sent us a new one, Bahita. Mama was not pleased with Bahita, telling Baba she was barely 12 years old, a mere child, more of a liability than an asset. Mama described her to a close friend in Germany.
"We spent one day de-lousing her of parasites, and she seemed to feel much better in her own skin because she started to sing, not so much work." Giddi reassured Mama that she would work out. It was Bahita's first time away from the village. Like many Arabic words, her name had a double meaning depending on the context. Fortunate in classical Arabic, or stupid in the colloquial tongue. The condescending tone of Mama's voice when she called her had the latter inflection. I felt sorry for Bahita to be so repeatedly humiliated. Having no experience, she was assigned to the chores of scullery maid and, on rare occasion, babysitter. Bahita, who had to take off her shoes by the door, was only a couple of heads taller than Gulnar, and was petite, shy, and soft-spoken. Her coconut-brown skin was highlighted by the white knee-length dress and framed by white headscarf Mama made her wear, in keeping with other servants of her European acquaintances. Our play progressed from dolls to doctor, which we indulged in with curiosity in our parents' absence. Gulnar determined that I be the doctor, telling me to listen to Bahita's heart with our toy stethoscope, and ordering Bahita to lie down on one of our long, low tables and to bare her chest. Gulnar directed me to use our toy iron to flatten Bahita's young breast mounds. Fascinated, I ironed with enthusiasm and focused engagement, making car noises as I pushed the iron back and forth as Gulnar watched. She threw the bolt across the door of the entrance hall. I attempted to flatten Bahita's erect nipples, excited by her closed eyes and trance-like state. The more I ran my flat iron over them, the more they swelled, and the louder she whimpered. Gulnar heard my parents returning, unlocked the door, and vanished. Bahita lay in a daze, her breasts exposed, her eyes closed to impending danger, as my parents walked through the front door. I stood there, flat iron in hand. Mama scolded me severely. "You are a bad boy, a bad, bad boy. You shouldn't take her clothes off and be doing such things." Bahita was shamed, told to get dressed and go into the kitchen. Baba merely glanced at me as he headed to his study. Did he disapprove also? My four-year-old self felt intense shame from the harsh reprimand, and I was confused as well. I had thought it was only a fun game. I did not understand its sexual implications. I didn't know it was bad. At that moment, I wanted hugs and kisses in all the ways a mother could give me that are right, good, and pure. I stood in shame while, from around the corner, Gulnar smirked.